The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPont.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Today is the first day of the second half of the year. That means the second half payment for the 2018 property taxes are due today if you're paying on the half payment plan. Homeowners across the state have seen the amount of taxes owed on their property taxes increase year after year, and recently Texas lawmakers passed a law to address that, SB 2. But what does SB 2 do, and will you actually see property tax relief because of it? Call in with your questions and comments about property taxes and appraisals. The number is 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this hour with Michael Amesquita. He is the chief appraiser for the Bexar County Appraisal District. Michael, welcome back to The Source.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Jennifer Robb is here. She's the director and fellow of the McNair Center for Entrepreneurship and Economic Growth at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. Jennifer Robb, welcome to The Source.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
And Dale Kramer joins us. He's the president of the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association. Dale Kramer, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Okay, so let's start off with Michael Amesquita. What do you make of SB 2? Is it changing anything that you do at the Bexar County Appraisal District?
Gosh, it's changing just about everything we do and how we do it. There are a lot of policy changes with respect to the Appraisal Review Board. Currently, in large metropolitan counties, the local administrative law judge appoints all ARB members. After SB 2, he's also now going to appoint the officers of the board. We also are setting up special panels in counties with population, I believe, over 500,000. We're going to have $50 million and up panels to hear special cases of, I guess, high-profile properties. Interesting, they want lawyers and MAI appraisers and very highly qualified people to sit on these panels. It's going to be really interesting to see how successful we are at actually putting those panels together.
But there's also other disqualifiers on who can be in these panels as well.
Oh, absolutely. But this is actually a special panel set up to administer property values that are $50 million and above.
Okay, and that's in order to, when people say, I'm paying too much on my commercial property.
Correct.
And then they have a special panel, they can hear their case.
That's correct.
And then
argue. Hopefully a more informed panel than just a regular homeowner panel.
And these are experts. Jennifer Robb with the Rice University's Baker Institute on Public Policy, what do you make of SB 2? What did we end up with?
Well, I think we've ended up with some great measures for transparency to taxpayers and some new opportunities for taxpayers who are upset that their property taxes are too high to participate in the property tax process. So it seems that most people are under the impression that their property tax appraisal, the notice that they receive each spring, determines their property tax liability, and that's not actually true. The appraised value is the base of the tax, but what determines how much you actually have to pay is the tax rate that each taxing unit sets in the fall of each year. Most people aren't aware of that process. They participate in the appraisal protest process in very high numbers, but very few people participate in the tax rate setting process. So, for instance, in Bexar County in 2016, there were 95,721 protests filed, but no one showed up at the tax rate hearings to say the tax rate's too high and my taxes are too high. So what SB 2 does is it gives taxpayers a new tool. Taxpayers will get in an electronic form each year a tax rate notice similar to the appraisal notice they receive now that will tell them the tax rates that are proposed for their property and what those tax rates would equate to in terms of the taxes they actually have to pay. And most importantly, it will give taxpayers the ability to give input to their local elected officials in an electronic form from the comfort of their own homes to say, hey, these taxes are too high for me, or I'm okay with these taxes. Maybe we want them a little higher because we want something at the park or we want a new library. So it's going to give taxpayers a new way to participate in the process that they've never had before.
So they can have a voice in more stops in the process.
Yes, exactly.
Dale Kramer, president of the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association, were you happy with the outcome with SB2?
Oh, very, very much so. And full disclosure, David, I mean, we are a nonprofit membership association in Austin, but I'm also a registered lobbyist. We were very active at the Capitol, and we did support Senate Bill 2 as it finally passed. And really, there are three things that the legislation does. And Michael's talked a little bit about the valuation process improvements. Jennifer's talked about the improved tax transparency for taxpayers. The third pillar of the bill deals with tax constraint that you talked about a little bit. It basically establishes a process whereby jurisdictions, should they adopt a tax rate that raises more than a certain amount of revenue, then that does trigger an automatic election. So it is ultimately the most comprehensive property tax reform legislation that this state has seen since 1979.
But still, SB2, it won't actually lower your property tax bill, will it?
It won't, but it will give you the tools where you can weigh in very directly with the jurisdictions that are setting the tax rates that determine the bottom line of your tax bill. It gives you greater tools to get engaged than what taxpayers have ever had before. Now, the challenge is, are they going to use those tools these next couple of years? We're going to find out.
One thing happened in San Antonio is that the San Antonio City Council passed a homestead exemption, and still people are not even really clear what that means. Michael Amesquita, Chief Appraiser for Bexar County Appraisal District. What is a homestead?
Well, the homestead exemption basically is, in the case of the City of San Antonio, would be a local option exemption. It could have been up to 20%. They adopted a 5% homestead exemption. I believe I read it was going to probably save an average homeowner in a $200,000 home about $28 a year, but it's a good start. Several large cities have adopted a 20%, as has their affiliated counties, and that makes a big difference in the overall tax burden for a homeowner. The state mandated homestead exemption is the one that most everyone has, if they applied for it, is the one that applies to the school district. And so that's a $25,000 homestead exemption. We sent out a press release advising taxpayers that if you're already receiving your school homestead exemption, we'll automatically enroll you in the city's homestead exemption process. There's no reapplication process.
How do I know if I have that homestead exemption already?
You can look up your property at www.bcad.org. Go online and you'll see when you pull up your account, it'll have the homestead exemption on there. Or you can call our office, and we'll be glad to look it up for you.
And if it doesn't, how hard is it to get the exemption?
It's very simple. In fact, in 2017, the legislature authorized us to look back 2 years. So if you qualified for a homestead exemption in January of 2017, but you didn't apply for it until 2019, I can give it to you for this year, I can give it to you for 18, and I can give it to you for 17.
If I get a letter in the mail, some guy offering to get me the homestead exemption for some sort of price, I should throw that letter away and just call?
Absolutely throw that away.
Because there are a lot of people that do that. They want to charge you for something you should get for free. We're going to take a break. Our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin. Davies, have you followed property tax reform in this year's legislature. What did you think about the outcome, the passage of SB2? And also we have some reforms with the school financing, which could also result in their lowering of property taxes. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Have you filed your protest? It seems to be something that everyone is doing these days. How did you do it? And what kind of experience did you have? And what could be done, do you think, to make that process more efficient for you? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Let's go back to a little more looking at what's in SB2. And so Michael M. Mesquita, Chief Appraiser for Bexar County Appraisal District, you're now required to post more information online. What's all that?
We actually we're required to maintain a website that all taxing units will upload all of their tax rate information. And there's some changes in terminology. The effective rate now becomes the no new revenue rate, and the rollback rate now becomes
Why do people like that rate. So much, no new revenue rate?
Because it's more direct and to the point. Nobody knows what an effective rate is. It means the same thing. I think it's in more lay person's terms so that the average homeowner can understand what they're talking about.
But what different? I mean, it shows you how even though your tax rate didn't go up, but your appraisal did. So you're seeing what?
You're seeing an increase in taxation, and so, you know, politically, oftentimes people like to say, I voted to not raise taxes. We kept the tax rate the same. Well, if you had a 30% increase in your appraised values in your jurisdiction, you left the tax rate the same. Guess what? You just had a 30% increase in tax revenue. And I think that's the whole purpose of SB2 is to curtail those, you know, they're called the hidden tax because they just creep up as values increase, tax rates don't decrease, and homeowners get stuck paying more taxes.
Jennifer Robb, the director and fellow at the McNair Center for Entrepreneurship Economic Growth at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. Do you think the homeowners are going to be more empowered with SB2?
Well, they certainly will be more empowered. I think that there will be a learning curve, as people absorb the fact that this new way of giving input on tax rates is available to them. Just as we were coming back from the break, I think you invited callers to call in and callers who protested to call in and talk about what their protest experience was like. And I hope that, you know, a few years down the road, we're having the same sort of conversations around now the tax rate notice. You'll be able to ask people, did you give input on your tax rate? And if so, what was it? And how did your local elected officials react to that? How it will be used, whether it will be used, is yet to be seen. But it's a very important tool to put out there, and I'm anxious to see how it works.
And Dale Kramer, the president of the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association, do you think SB2 is a start? Where would you want to go from here?
I think SB2 is a pretty comprehensive package, and we're going to have to live with it for a while before we sort of see what phase two is. But the bottom line is SB2, as you pointed out, it's not going to cut anyone's property taxes from where they are now. But what it's going to do is probably shave some of the growth that we would otherwise see off our tax bill. So it may not make an immediate difference, but in 10 years, it will provide real savings against the property taxes that we would have paid otherwise.
Let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. Antonio is on the line. Antonio, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Antonio, you with us? Okay, he's not, something happened there. Michael M. Mesquite, the chief appraiser with the Bexar County Appraisal District, how many people are showing up to challenge their appraisals?
They ran 116,000 appeals this year. As we were talking earlier, we got started quite a bit earlier this year. We sent notices out right after the 1st of April. So we had a whole nother month of time to deal with folks on a walk-in basis. As of this morning, we've already cleared 63,000 appeals. So we have about another 45 or 6 to go. But that's a really good position for us to be in. I'm happy to report to you that I think something on the order of 87% of all informals are resulting in settlements, which means those homeowners are out there enjoying the rest of their summer and not going to a formal hearing.
And how many of those actually see a reduction in their appraisals?
You know, I've not actually looked at that number. I would say that the majority of them would see some sort of an adjustment. We do a mass appraisal. Oftentimes homeowners and business owners come in with information about the property that we weren't aware of, and we can then take that into consideration as the law requires us to. We do a mass appraisal, but we have to look at the individual characteristics of the properties.
Is there a look at a breakdown of who is protesting their appraisal from which part of town?
A great big part of it, this is kind of the epicenter of where the protests come from. The north central, northwest, northeast area of town is where the vast majority of them come. We're seeing an inordinate number of appeals in the urban core simply because of all the redevelopment of the Pearl and downtown and San Pedro Creek. And there's a lot of value drivers and influences down there that are causing values to rise rather abruptly.
Let's go back to the seats. I think Antonio's back. Antonio, welcome to The Source. Are you there?
Good afternoon, yes, sir. Sorry about that.
Okay, go right ahead.
Yes, sir. I'm fixing to build, good afternoon. I'm fixing to build a house up there in Timberwood Park. And is this going to affect me? How will this benefit me? Of course, you know, it's always about taxes, you know, but will there be any benefit for me? And I'm 61 years old, and at what age do I get a benefit, or is there any benefit at a certain age where it adjusted the property taxes down?
And so your question is about the homestead exemption.
Yes, sir, and the homestead too. Am I gonna get any opportunities from it?
Okay.
Up there?
All right. Thank you, Antonio. So, Michael and Mesquita, anything you can say about that?
Yeah, Antonio, I think the most important thing to take away from this is kind of what Dale said. SB2 isn't going to have a direct impact on you today, but in 10 years, it will continue to limit the growth of taxation in all jurisdictions, and particularly school districts. You would not be eligible for the homestead exemption from the city of San Antonio and Timberwood Park, as that's actually out in the county. But you would want to apply for a homestead exemption for your school district. And I'm on the fence about whether that's in Comal ISD or if that's going to be in a far end of Northeast ISD. But in either case, we'll be able to help you with that. And you certainly want to claim that homestead exemption for school district tax purposes, because that will keep a 10% cap on future value increases once your home is completed.
So your homestead is like where you live.
That's actually correct. You're only entitled to one as a family or as an individual, to one in the state of Texas.
So it's not your vacation home.
That's
correct. Not your second home, not your rental property.
Correct.
It's where you sleep at night.
That's correct.
Okay. And that's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
All right, let's go to Lisa on the phones, 210-614-8980. Lisa, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I believe that our property taxes are a good thing. Our property taxes go to benefit the school districts, and our property taxes go to keep our roads in good repair and to other community resources. I know that this SB2 has some particular wording about, you know, increases of taxes over time, but I just want to put this out there that, you know, there's so much fuss made about property taxes, but property taxes keep our communities running smoothly, and if we keep on taking taxes revenues away from schools, we're choking off our school districts. And we don't want that. We want our community to provide good education for our young people. So I think when I hear people balking and whining about property taxes, I think that's petty, ignorant, and short-sighted.
All right, Lisa, thank you for your call. I appreciate that. Let's go to Dale Kramer, president of the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association, for your response.
Well, I think that's an opinion we don't often hear, but I think it's a valid one, too. I mean, let's face it. We want efficient government working in Texas, and property tax is the way that we end up paying for that. I think one of the reasons Texas, when you compare us to other states, is the fact that our property taxes are so high is because we do not have a personal income tax. And oftentimes you'll hear economists talk about state and local revenue systems as being a three-legged stool, an income tax, a sales tax, and a property tax. Well, Texas has a two-legged stool, and we do rely much more heavily on property taxes than do other states. Now, with regards to the importance of funding education, I think this legislature put a priority on that. And it's not a part of Senate Bill 2, it's in a different bill, House Bill 3, put $11 billion of new money into our schools. Now, about $5 billion of that is going to limit property tax growth, but there's $6 billion that is new money going into our public school system that's hopefully going to produce a better product.
And Jennifer Robb with the Rice University Baker Institute for Public Policy, can you react to Lisa?
Yeah, so I think Lisa is right that in some respects, property tax is one of the best taxes that we have. And that's because it's the one that is most within the control of taxpayers. I know that we feel like we can't control it, but let's just compare it a moment to sales tax. Do you have the opportunity every year to go to the legislature and tell them that you think the sales tax is too high? No. Do you have the opportunity to go to Congress and say that you think your income tax is too high? No, you don't. But with property tax, you do have the opportunity to go to your local elected officials every year and let them know how much you're willing to pay and what you expect in return in terms of government services. Also, I want to say that in my opinion, the major problem with property tax is that it's not related to cash flow. So if you think about sales tax, you can't buy anything unless you are also prepared to pay the sales tax at the same time you buy it. Income tax is the same. We have a withholding system that helps you pay your income tax and your employment tax as you go, as you earn money throughout the tax year. And we don't have a similar system for property tax unless you have a mortgage and it's part of your escrow. But if you own your property outright and you have to make property tax in one lump sum payment, that's a hardship. And we do have an installment payment method, but I think it needs to be made more robust. So under our current law, you can break your property tax into four payments, and they all have to be paid by August 1st of the tax year. And I think that's still, if we're talking about a large property tax bill, those are still large payments that require a lot of advanced planning for folks. And so my sense is that that's the direction that the legislature is going to have to go next. With the property tax, we're going to have to figure out ways to help people work property tax into their monthly budget.
So that they would be able to have, what, an automatic debit or a monthly bill for your property taxes, unlike today, which is the deadline to pay your property tax for the second quarter of the year.
Right. So, something similar to the escrow system. So as I said, if you have a mortgage, your mortgage company requires that you pay your property tax to them, in installments throughout the year, and then they pay your property tax for you in one lump sum. Our tax assessor collectors are already set up to collect quarterly payments. It seems to me that they could just as easily be set up to collect monthly payments.
So they wouldn't have that sticker shock at the end of the quarter or at the end of the year. We're going to take a break. Our phone line is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're looking at property taxes and what came out of the 86th legislative session up in Austin. What bills did they pass? Looking at property taxes, we got SB 2 and House Bill 3. What will that result in? And also, how could that impact the revenue of cities and what that means for services that cities provide? Here we're talking about their less property taxes, less revenue. Does that mean there's going to be a cutback in services as well? And what are you willing to absorb for that as a taxpayer? The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this break.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davis. Whenever we have a conversation about property taxes, the phones catch fire. People really have a lot to say about it. If you want to join our conversation today, we invite you. The number is 210-614-8980. Do you think that homeowners are being taken advantage of by these property taxes? You think that maybe the middle class homeowner is too much of a burden on them, whereas the higher tax bracket of homeowner or commercial property, they're getting a deal. What about all of these tax abatements that sometimes these taxing authorities provide? Who pays for that? That's going to be the homeowner. Maybe that needs to be looked at as well, because we have this burden upon the middle class homeowner. And it seems to be shifting heavier and heavier all the time. The number is 210-614-8980. We have Randy on the line. Randy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Say, I'm a residential homeowner in the Bexar County Appraisal District, and I'm concerned about equitability for paying taxes. I'm like the woman. I'm all for paying taxes, but it really chaps me when it's so inequitable. And I wanted to ask about the Senate bill, and see if that helps, because with mass appraisals, despite the size of that organization down there, they still do mass appraisals, and it's on acreage primarily and not homes, and people buy based on homes. By default, you get the high tax value. You have to lift a finger. You have to go down and protest in order for you to get some chance of equitability. Also, there's transparency of sales prices of commercial and residential properties. That's always been a bone of contention. I got nothing down there several times, but a commercial guy right next to me saying, "Hey, he made out like a bandit." So,
all right, Randy, thank you for that. So let's go first to Jennifer Robb with the Rice University's Baker Institute on Public Policy, and she's a director of the McNair Center for Entrepreneurship and Economic Growth. Is there an issue with equitability with the way property taxes, property appraisals are done?
Well, I'm not an expert on appraisals, and so I might have to defer to Michael or Dale on that. But let me say that there are a lot of processes in place so that taxpayers can, of course, appeal their appraised value if they disagree with it. And also go to arbitration or sue the appraisal district in court if they think they're being treated unfairly. So under our state constitution, all property is required to be appraised at its market value. And so that's there so that the property tax system is equitable, so that those who have less pay less, and those who have more in terms of property value anyway, pay more. Of course, it's not a perfect system because human beings administer it.
But it's also, we don't know what the market value is actually. It's because the sale price is not disclosed.
Well, that's not entirely true. It is true that sales prices are not required to be disclosed to the appraisal district. But we have, realtors have a great deal of data about sales prices. Private appraisers have a great deal of information about sales prices. The data is out there and we can know. So I'm not sure that sales price disclosure itself would be a cure-all. It certainly would give more information, but I'm frankly not sure how much information it would add to what's already available.
Well, for me, one reason why I'm so suspicious of all that is because I know how hard people in the business fight the requirement to disclose the sale price.
Yeah, that's true. They have. And if you don't mind, I'll defer to Dale on that, because I think that he is more familiar with both sides of the argument than I am.
All right. So Dale Kramer is the president of the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association. Sir, the hot potato is yours.
Oh, gee, thanks, David. I don't have a problem with sales price disclosure. I think the challenge is that in Texas, we apply the property tax to the value of real property. Now, the challenge with, say, someone buying a refinery, a part of that sales price may include the transfer of technology, which is intangible and is not a part of the real value of the property. That intangible value is not subject to property tax. We don't, our association doesn't have a problem with sales price disclosure as long as there's an ability to identify the intangible value associated with some of the sales prices. But otherwise, you're exactly right. There is a lot of pushback at the Capitol. There are a number of groups that oppose sales price disclosure, but done right, we certainly don't have a problem with it.
And Michael Amesquita, chief appraiser for the Bexar County Appraisal District, how would mandatory disclosure of sale price of Texas impact or provide a better, even playing field for appraisals?
Well, it's just generally going to lend more credibility to the appraised values that we would be publishing for taxpayers. Quite honestly, if you look at all the litigation we have in Bexar County, some $25 billion under protest, none of it is claiming to be overappraised. They're saying we're unequally appraised because they're playing the shell game of no property being appraised above the median level of value of a group of comparable properties. So if you're the best hotel in town, you compare yourself to six other hotels and you take the best one and put it in the middle. That's essentially what that does. That's all the litigation we have is the equal and uniform appeals.
But the market value of a piece of property, say like my home, okay, I get my appraisal in the mail and I see it's gone up and my eyes fall out of my head and whatever. But then I also think about if someone offered me that much money for my house, I wouldn't take it. It still wouldn't be enough for that. It would be too low. So what am I experiencing?
Well, I think particularly here in San Antonio and in most major metropolitan areas, we have an undersupply of housing stock available. So maybe you get $250,000 for the home that, you know, we've appraised at $250,000, but what are you going to go buy? And so you're generally going to have to spend more. So depending on how long you've been in your home and how much equity you have in your home will kind of determine whether or not that makes sense to you as a selling point. Most often we find that we tend to be a little bit below the market. We never aim at 100. We always aim at 97. 97% of market, that is. The state comptroller's property value study, where they test our level of values in every school district, simply requires it be between 95 and 105. So we always try to be within tolerance within that range and look as poor as possible because, you know, under the current funding formulas, we would stand to benefit more from state revenue as long as we pass that test.
All right. To the phones we go with Hector. Hector, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I have a comment. I moved into a fairly undeveloped area, and soon after I moved in, well, a couple of years after that, development followed me. The big, Walmart, the grocery store, gas station, even a car dealership, and a furniture store. And because of that, my taxes went up. Is there maybe a chance that the Bexar County Appraisal District can cap my taxes since I did not follow development? Development followed me and other neighbors. Is there a way that they can cap it maybe, I don't know, after 5 years of home ownership? You know, that's going to be my cap. If I ever sell it or refinance it, okay, well, then tax me again at the new rate. But for people like myself that move to, again, undeveloped areas, and then the stores followed me, I think it's a little unfair that they charge me more taxes because
we got it.
Now that area is being developed.
Hector, thank you so much. So let me go to Jennifer Robb about that with the Rice University Baker Institute on Public Policy. There was some talk in the legislature. I think Diego Bernal, state rep from San Antonio, had floated a bill. If you lived in a home for X number of years, then your property value would be kind of locked in. That didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, so California has been living with that situation since they passed what they called Prop 13 around 1980, give or take a few years. And it hasn't worked out very well. It distorts the market, right? There's a disincentive to sell property if when you sell it, the value of the property goes up to full market value. There's also then becomes an incentive to transfer property without a sale. You know, so for instance, families will create trusts or limited liability companies and shift, shift the property through those artificial vehicles instead of selling it outright in order to avoid having the taxable value go up to full market value. So those kinds of laws create distortions in the marketplace that I think would end up in a worse, put us in a worse place than what we currently have, which is market value under the Constitution.
So the short answer is no, there's nothing like that right now. Dale Kramer, and we heard from Jennifer Robb saying why that's a bad idea if you look at the macroeconomics of it. But as the president of the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association, is that something that appeals to you and your associates?
Well, a couple of thoughts about that is one, any value you take off the rolls just means that somebody else is paying your taxes for you. But, you know, that said, he does have some protections that are available to them. Michael pointed out earlier that there is a 10% limit on the increase in appraised value for homeowners. Nobody else gets that. No business properties get that. So that is designed to protect homeowners against a sticker shock that they get when they get their appraisals. The one thing that hasn't been said today is that the happiest day of the year for you should be when you get an appraisal notice saying your home is worth a lot more than it was last year, because that's telling you that the most valued asset that you own is growing and is worth more, and that's making you wealthier.
Sure, and it tells you you're a smart guy, that you bought the right house, and it keeps going up in value. We're going to take one more break. The number to call in if you want to talk about property taxes, got a question or a comment, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after a one-minute break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about property taxes and how we pay them. We really have to be concerned about there are people who do struggle to pay their property taxes. And what does that mean? How do we make that more fair? How do we build breaks into the system to keep people in their homes? How do we think about that? Michael Mesquita is the chief appraiser for the Bexar County Appraisal District.
You know, this is a conversation Diego and I had over 2 years ago. We helped him work on the anchor homeowner bill that didn't really go anywhere. I think that we have to take a little bit bigger perspective. There's a lot of financial data out there that we can identify, possibly to create a circuit breaker system like they have in other states where they have an income tax. If we could somehow, you know, it's great that your property value is going up. It's great that your biggest asset is growing and your net worth is increasing.
But you never plan on selling,
right?
Then that means nothing.
That absolutely doesn't do anything except drive up your cost. And so, you know, another way of looking at that would be to try to impose some sort of a circuit breaker to limit how much tax you would actually pay. Wouldn't limit your value, but it would limit the amount of tax impositions.
But something that wouldn't do, like Jennifer Robb, she was talking about, that would warp the market. We saw with Prop 13 in California how people say that actually drove up the value to buy property in California, because you had to put enough money on the table to dislodge people to give up to sell. Which, correct. You know, why would you want to sell if you found, if you got a good deal on your property taxes?
Right.
Okay, another caller. Just go to Lisa. The number is 210-614-8980. And Lisa, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to talk a little bit about land. I protested my taxes every year, and it seems to go down. But this last week when I went in, I was told that my land value was the only thing that went up by $30,000, and I could not protest it. So what do I do when that happens now that they've got me on land and not the actual value of the home?
Okay. And so are you in the city or in the county? Where are you, Lisa? Is it a lot of land?
In the city.
And is this a typical lot we're talking about?
It's a house, but the house value didn't go up. They know that I come in every year and protest it, so they bring it down. But this year, they decided to go up $30,000 on the land alone.
Okay.
And so now the land is attached to the house.
Sure.
But they said I can't protest the land value.
All right. Let me go to Michael M. Mesquita, the chief appraiser for Bexar County Appraisal District. Get your response.
Yeah, we get a lot of these type of appeals. A lot of areas inside Loop 410 had not been looked at in quite a while. We find properties in the Denver Heights area, for example, east of the Alamo Dome, where 5-6 years ago, you could have bought a lot for $12,000 or $15,000. Now they're $60,000. The truth of the matter is, in Texas, we're required to send a separate land and improvement value. But the total value still has to be reflective of the market. So you can still protest the land. It's just not the individual pieces or components of the value, but the total value. It still has to reflect market. In some way, it's kind of like trying to make the land value the location modifier, if you will. You build the same house far out in Bexar County, it might sell for one price. If you build it, you know, in a nice neighborhood inside of San Antonio, the same exact house, it may bring more money based on its location as opposed to being out in the county. But still, irrespective, the total value is what can be appealed, and the total value has to be equal to market.
But she can protest the land assessment, right?
You cannot protest the individual components because there's not a vacant lot. We're only talking about a land and a house at the combined property value.
Right.
That total value still cannot exceed market value.
Okay. So she's not capable of breaking it down and protesting parts A, B, and C. You're looking at the entirety of it.
That's correct.
But in some parts of San Antonio, which for so long have been overlooked, are seeing a lot of interest, and those lots are, maybe the house is not so good, but people want to buy the lots.
We actually commissioned a study this year, an independent MAI review of several of the historic neighborhoods, because our land values, there are no sales of vacant lots. That doesn't mean that the land is valueless. It means it's probably more valuable than we know. In every case, the estimate of value that came back was between 20 and 30% higher than what we had placed on the property.
Jennifer Robb with the McNair Center for Entrepreneurship and Economic Growth. What do you see as the trend with property taxes in Texas? Do you think that we're going to have to find a way to add another revenue source to put another leg on that shaky two-legged stool?
Well, if we want to reduce property tax substantially, it seems that it would require another revenue source. The adjustments in Senate Bill 2 that we've been talking about are particularly the school finance adjustments. It's only projected to decrease property taxes, specifically school property taxes, statewide by about $1.35 billion a year. And our entire property tax system is $60 billion a year. So that's a 2.25% reduction, on average statewide. So it's with such a large tax system, $60 billion a year, it's really hard to make significant changes. We need another significant revenue source if we wanted to do that.
And we have all sorts of backstops in place to keep Texas from going to income tax. We tried a higher franchise tax in Texas for businesses. I don't know where we are with mineral taxes. I mean, what else is there, Jennifer?
Well, I think the the preferred source of revenue for conservatives is consumption tax always. In other words, sales tax. It's hard to raise the sales tax or broaden the base, I think, as the legislature found out this year, because sales tax is a regressive tax, and it hits poor people the hardest. The business tax, the margin tax, which you said, has not lived up to expectations in terms of the revenue that it raises. It seems to me that that's a logical place to look. I think a lot of conservatives, and of course conservatives are in the majority right now in the state, conservatives reject business taxes. But because of some, you know, peculiarities, technicalities of how the business tax works, it really functions like a consumption tax in some ways. And so that's something that I'm working on in my center to explain how that process works. So that might be a possible revenue source in the future.
We'll go to one last caller. This is Alan. And Alan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. This is not very big deal, but Bexar County is far enough in advance that we are able to pay our taxes month by month. And I've been doing that for 2 or 3 years now.
Okay. And is that working for you?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good deal. I get a notice a little bit ahead of time. You know, your tax bill, I've got it automatically withdrawn from my bank account, and they just tell me that they're going to take it out, which I knew anyway, but I appreciate the heads up. And then they take it, and that's all there is to that.
All right, Alan, thank you for the call. We got a tweet from Hoven. Working class homeowners have to deal with these exponential appraisal assessments when one has a current steady income. But, you know, you wonder about people who are in the working class neighborhood, and you see, do they really have the wherewithal and the ability and the time off to go through the protest process? Michael and Mesquita.
That's a great question, and I'll just say this. We offer evening hearings, after five hearings, informally and formally. We also offer a weekend hearing if needed. So we try to make it available. The legislature requires us to make it available. You still have to protest. We also have online protests. If you can't do anything else, it would be worth it just to get our evidence and get our information so that you can put your best case forward, whether you do it online, whether you do it in the evening, or whether you do it on the weekend.
Dale Kramer, president of the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association. What do you want to see happening next?
I want to see people getting more involved in the rate setting process. And I think we've seen a little bit of confusion today where people think they're protesting their taxes when they're challenging the value that Chief Fraser Amesquita has put on their property. The truth is, Michael Amesquita has never raised your taxes. All your value does is determine what share of the jurisdiction's property taxes you're going to pay. You owe nothing until they adopt a tax rate. And I would like to see people getting more involved in the rate setting process, because that is what really drives how much their property tax bill is.
And how this is going to impact communities like San Antonio, you know, if we have a reduction, we're a high growth city, you know, people are concerned that there's going to be some sort of curtailment, a contraction on services. And Dale Kramer, what's your take on that?
High growth cities are automatically protected. Any new value that goes on the tax rolls, any new building that wasn't on the tax rolls last year, that 3.5% limit that the legislature has put in place does not apply to any revenue generated from that property. So if you're seeing an organic growth in your tax base of 3% every year, then instead of a 3.5% limit, you're really looking at a 6.5% limit. So the system, the bill that the legislature passed sort of self-corrects for whether you're a fast-growth district or not.
All right. I want to thank all of our guests this afternoon. Michael Amesquita is the chief appraiser for the Bexar County Appraisal District. Jennifer Robb is the director and fellow of the McNair Center for Entrepreneurship and Economic Growth at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. And also that was Dale Kramer, president of the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association. I'm David Martin Davies. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for your support, and thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams. Direction provided by News Director Dan Katz. Technical assistance provided by Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.